is the Still Brewing It podcast. We are broadcasting to you semi-live, I like to call it, you know.
Yeah.
Coming from three different geographic regions, we got Mr. Danish Ahmed coming in from California.
Yes, sir.
And I'm joined with Junaid Ahmed. He's coming in from Denver, Colorado.
What's up?
And I'm reporting from good old Phoenix, Arizona, the hottest place on the freaking planet, as far as I'm concerned. So,
wow, so you got the guy from the coldest place, one of the coldest places, and then you got the guy from the hottest place. And, well, I'm in Southern California, so I'm in the most amazing.
You're in the coolest and the hottest place.
The coolest, hot.
Absolutely. I think we both agree, since we're all from California, that that truly is the best place to be.
Yeah, know? Being from and being here are two different things.
Yeah. But we can appreciate it, you know?
Yes.
We're not like, oh, well, California sucks because we've never been there. So, you know. Yeah. So anyway, this is the Still Brewing It podcast. We are kind of a group of guys that decided to get together and I think came to the conclusion that what we talk about must be really interesting. So we want to share it with the rest of the world and make everyone kind of join into our discussions and get to hear our thoughts on a lot of interesting things that are going on. I think this podcast is going to be a little bit about everything. We're going to talk about from tech to politics to social issues to current events, whatever's floating around on the interwebs, and
all the way down to baby mama drama. We're doing it.
Even the risky topics that'll potentially get us into trouble with all our spouses, but you know.
No, absolutely not. I'm having no part of that.
So just to give you guys a little background about us, why don't we go around the table? So I'll start with Mr. Danish himself.
Hey, my name is Danish Ahmed, and it's Danish, spelled like Danish, but with an O, and born and raised in Southern California. Been an entrepreneur, I guess, ever since I could remember, since the age of 14. Actually, Jay and I started a little computer company back in the day. We would buy some parts and then put computers together and then sell them. I don't think we made any money, but we definitely got a story out of it.
Yeah.
And we could have been the next Dell or HP, but I was in high school and Junaid was just going to school, and so
just blame it on a capital issue, you know. Just
yeah exactly. That was
capital.
That was not enough capital. That's what we're talking about. And so, and then you know, I rode the mortgage wave for a little bit, and throughout it all, my passion has always been in technology and creating something from nothing. And so now I get to do all of that at Centric Media with creating web applications, mobiles, and things like that. Been married for a couple years, and so there is a female out there. I found her that could put up with me, and that is definitely a fine line that putting up with goes along with. And so I'm sure you guys know a little bit about what I'm talking about, and I'm sure you can deny it right now as this is being recorded. And so, but yeah, I got a couple siblings. One brother, one sister. Interestingly enough, we're 5-10 years apart. No planning there, Mom and Dad. Thank you. You know, what's crazy is we never went to school together. Like, I never went to school with my brother. Actually, I did in college. One time, me, my mom, and my brother had a class together. I'm still going to therapy for that. Anyways, that's me in a nutshell, or a long shell.
Cool. So basically, Danish is kind of bringing in the angle on this podcast for a guy who has a lot of experience running businesses and really being an entrepreneur pretty much throughout your entire life. I don't think you've spent a day in the corporate world at all, you know?
No, yeah, I got a wealth of mistakes, a wealth of failures, and so plenty of stories of what not to do and a little bit of what to do. And, I like what I do. Never a dull moment.
Very cool, man. All right, so next on the list, we have Junaid. Junaid, why don't you give us a little bit about your background?
All right, hey, guys. Yeah.
I guess there's just not that much there, you know.
There's not much there, you know. Tech is my. I'm a tech enthusiast, techno junkie.
Tech is your passion, man. I mean,
it's my passion. Anybody has a question on tech, they come to me, even though they can just Google it, but they'd rather have me Google it for them and explain it to them what's going on.
I think they Google it, and then Google asks you, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
There you go. I think so. When I first started, it was pretty basic stuff. I actually wanted to be a pilot as long as I could remember. Or maybe I can't remember. But I got into computers, started designing. And since then, I've been in design and keeping up with the tech world and stuff like that. It's pretty exciting. It's been an exciting run following tech and trying to keep up with it, which is impossible.
You're like a major fanboy, aren't you?
I am a fanboy of...
And you know what's funny is, like, you used to be a PC boy. Like, I remember when you made the transition from, like, PC to fanboy, and I was like, dude, this... friendship is over. Like, hell no.
And you still talk to me, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I have a nickname for Junaid, and that's Mr. iOS, because he really is, you know, the guy that if you ever want anything to do with Apple, any new news, rumors about technology, what's coming out, basically Junaid is the guy. But I think you kind of know about everything, man. I mean, literally, it's you're not just Apple focused. You might like Apple, but you pretty much know about everything that's going on.
Yeah. Like his son's nickname is Nano, and as he grows older, like, his nicknames will progress, you know, or actually shuffle, and then it'll go Nano, and then, you know, whatever the next level iPod or whatever it is. Poor guy, man. I feel for him sometimes.
But yes, I am married for over 6 years. Exciting feeling. I have a little guy who runs around, makes my life the most
worth living.
Yeah, exactly. He makes my life worth living. That's an awesome understatement.
I wanted to make sure you didn't say make my life a living hell. I wanted to slip that in there.
Yeah, I know.
As this is
but
live.
It's amazing. He is a joy to be around with. He says the funniest things. And we've all seen that show. Kid says the darndest things. You know, he's not there yet, but, you know, he's catching up. And it's pretty awesome.
What's going to be awesome, he's going to be like, this is my MacBook. This is my iPad. This is my Nano.
He already says that, man.
What are you doing? Get off my Apple TV.
Yeah. That's right. I think it's actually a really good, you know, you have a really good angle to come in on in terms of, like, you know, what type of technology really works with kids, because you're kind of seeing that progression, you know, and kind of seeing it firsthand in terms of how well iPads or, you know, laptops and so forth
exactly
are used by the little ones. So.
And what's funny is that he loves the iPad. You know, he asks for the iPad whenever he wakes up and whatever. And if he's on the computer, he would start touching the screen. He's like, why is this
yeah, what's going
happening?
On?
What's happening?
You know, what's difficult for me is to see the little guy grow up. And it's like he has, like, two moms, right? Because he doesn't get the other perspective, which is the PC, the Microsoft, the Windows, that perspective, right? And Android is like the uncle, right? Like, it's like the weird uncle. Like, you just take that in doses. Right? And literally the weird uncle. You gotta take that in doses. And so I'm concerned about your son's well-being.
He'll be fine.
Growing up in a tech world with only having, you know, one side of the story.
He'll be fine. They'll eventually you know,
yeah, don't worry
make
about
up
it, bro.
Their mind, and yeah, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I'll take care of that, man. You ain't gotta worry about that.
He'll be set. He'll be, you know, one thing, he'll have a really high expectation of what he wants from his technology. That's
Without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wait, I got to drive myself? What is this?
Yep. I'm sure Google's automatic drive car is going to be around by the time our kids start driving. Dude, 20 years from now, right? 18, 15 years from now?
Yeah, he's like, I'm not going to change my kid's diaper. There better be a device that does that, you know, program that thing. That thing better turn into fuel for my you know, my car.
I just hope I'm around when that happens for myself, because that's the one thing I can't wait for, man, is just have the car take me to work, take me somewhere else, so I can just sit there and sleep or do what, you know.
You got to take it a step further, Umar. You got to just be like, I can't wait so I don't have to go to work.
Exactly, Umar.
That's and, wrong, and we plan for that accordingly. Like, we already planned for that accordingly. Those 4 years in residency and med school, you know, those were some tough years.
Yeah, just well, kidding. They're still going on. They're still going on. So, you know.
Oh yeah. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah. All right. So let's take you to Umar.
All right. So again, my name is Umar Mohinuddin. I am. My background is primarily been working in aerospace and defense for the last 10 years. As a software engineer. I grew up in Pakistan for a little bit, and then I moved to the States after that. I've kind of been living in the U.S. ever since. We moved around a bit, kind of moved around from the East Coast to the South to the, you know, to the West, and that was kind of an interesting experience. You get a chance to really see a lot of different people and kind of the cultural differences just within America itself. So that was kind of interesting when I was growing up. One of the things that got me into tech and into computers was that when I was young, my dad got me a Commodore 64. That was like, or Commodore 128. That was my first computer. And I think the first time I got my hands on that and actually got a chance to do some real basic programming, I just fell in love with the idea that here was a machine that I could do something with and program it, and then it would do something. And it was kind of like a real power trip for a kid, you know, to have that kind of control over something, right? And so for me, having that experience kind of led me to want to pursue that throughout kind of my whole high school and college career. I'm also married, and I have a kid. She's 2 years old.
Wow.
And it's hard for me to believe that that's actually how long it's been, you know, so.
And no, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where having a kid, again, it's really neat to kind of expose them to technology and expose them to different ideas and so forth, you know. And as a parent, it's amazing how much influence you have on your kids, you know. And you kind of realize all the stuff that you care about. You kind of have an opportunity to share that love with your kids, and you hope that they like it, you know. And so me and my wife always have this competition between us, you know, in terms of the kind of stuff that I want my daughter to get into, which is usually the nerdy, the geek tech stuff, you know. And so we'll see how that plays out. I think what I kind of bring on into this podcast more than anything is just my experience in working in software. I've kind of done a lot of different things from that perspective. I've programmed in quite a few languages over the course of time. I've done C, I've done Ada, I've done Java, done a little bit of this and that. Hopefully, this podcast is going to be something that we can share some of our experiences and expertise, and maybe enlighten you guys, whoever's out there listening, and you know, help to get a better understanding of, and I would say a better, well-rounded understanding of some of the things that are going on today. So
awesome.
You know, what's crazy is, you know, I was looking at today. You know, a lot of kids. Yesterday was a lot of kids, like first day of school. And so, a lot of my high school friends are, like, putting up their children's pictures. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, one, either I'm behind or, wow, I'm not behind.
He's got the gun.
Yeah, like, you started way too early. But I'm sure that's a pretty awesome feeling.
Yeah.
I think it's a great feeling overall when your kids reach an age where they no longer need to be diaper changed and stuff. I'm kind of looking forward to that. You know, when that happens, I'll be so grateful.
Yeah, but then now they're like questioning you, right? Like, why? Why do I got to do this?
Yeah. But, we all hope that we get kids like Danish, you know, who challenge us every day.
Oh, yeah, even till this day. Like, no, I'm not doing that. You
awesome
do that.
I would tell Muhammad, I would tell my kid, you know, hey, go get that. And he goes, okay. And then he would go and get the thing, you know, you're asking for. And, you know, like, throw this trash away. It's like, okay, throw it in the trash. Okay.
Yeah, he's collecting that, bro. He's collecting that. He's like, okay. No mistake is okays, bro.
I guess. I mean, He's pretty.
So you know what? This makes for a really good segue because I think you know, especially the both of us, we have kids, and eventually they're going to be going through, you know, their kindergarten and elementary and high school and so forth, eventually going to college. And if we're smart, we should be saving some money to help them go to college and so forth, right?
I think by the time they're going to college, I think education is going to be free.
I hope so.
That's what I'm hoping for, bro. Shoot. Education ain't not saving anything.
So that brings us to our first topic, you know. So what do you think about, I guess, where education is going? And the real question is about online education, because I think all of us, when we were going through college, were kind of exposed to that a little bit. Some of our courses were online. We were able to kind of mix and match. And I think all of us have had interesting experiences in either, you know, maybe some good, some bad. So why don't we kind of go around the table and discuss that? You know, what is really the...
Really the what?
What is the future of college education? Do you think online is going to completely replace everything? Or is it going to continue to be a mix of both? And what are the pluses and minuses of either, you know? And Junaid, why don't you take a shot at that one, man?
Well, college education by the time... So online education, I only took probably one online class because when I was going to college, online was kind of like a brand new thing. And now I see that, you know, it's all over the place.
Junaid, before you answer that, let me preface the question with an additional, because our idea of education, we've been brainwashed into thinking like education in terms of traditional education, right? And Correct. So also, I mean, I would also discuss in it the education from tutorials, from just learning online, right? Like from a tech development perspective. So just don't narrow your experience from a just traditional education.
Okay. So when I was going to college, they didn't have many online classes, but
it was all text-based back then, right?
It was all text-based. You know, you have to go into class. You have a book and you write stuff down and you do stuff with the textbook. As time progressed and I started working, a lot of stuff started popping up, online education, where, you know, you have the opportunity to learn stuff that you wanted to in class, but you didn't have the time to go take that class specifically. And that's all available now online, thanks to technology and the interwebs getting, you know, high tech and growing with that. So there's tons of places where you can learn topics related to tech, related to business, related to most of the stuff that doesn't require practical application or where you need, like, for example, civil engineering, you know, you need to practice it in a certain way or you need to learn it, or maybe I don't have the right examples, maybe somebody could pitch in, but as far as it goes out to tech-related education, you can get all of that online easily. There's codeschool.com where you can sign up for courses and go through programming languages by trying it out in your web browser. I mean, who would have thought that was going to be possible, 10 years ago? Khan Academy is another great example. They actually came out about 5 years ago. The guy, Salman Khan, I think Salman Khan started this. He basically started recording these video screen shares on YouTube for his nephews and cousins because he was basically tutoring them. But when he was tutoring them in person, you know, they would get some information. But when he started recording these screencasts on YouTube and putting it out there, it was great for them because they could pause it go do whatever they got to do. They come back and they start it back up, or you know, they could continue by going over and over the same stuff that he's talking about, so they can better understand it.
I think you nailed a really key point there, which is that when people are learning from other people, maybe inside a classroom, there's always a small factor of kind of an embarrassment. Like, let's say the teacher asks a group of people, does everybody understand? And 90% of the people raise their hand. Maybe you don't, but you're not going to be the one kid who's going to be like, no, I don't get it, you know?
Yep.
And you kind of move on, and oftentimes that leads to misunderstanding or something, or the fact that you just kind of get left behind. Versus here, you can pause it, go back, watch it 10 times or 100 times.
Yeah, you have no...
Until you get it.
There's no limit.
Right.
And Khan Academy was actually funded later on by Bill Gates, because Bill Gates' kids started using Khan Academy or YouTube videos, and Bill Gates was like, what is this? I want to send him a check. And Sal, you know, he was like pretty excited when...
He's like, I just want to write him a check.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to write him a check, you know, help him get this, you know, off the ground. And there's actually a TED Talk about Khan Academy also, where Salman Khan talks about, you know, how he got started. So that was pretty awesome. CodeAcademy.com is another one that came into being probably a few years ago. But what's awesome about Code Academy, it's completely free, and actually a lot of companies have told their employees that they need to know at least some kind of programming knowledge, even though they're not programmers themselves. So what they did is, there's this one company, I can't remember the name of it, but they brought in Code Academy to their company, and they had the entire company learn how to code, which is pretty amazing. You know, it gave them an insight on how their products that they're selling or that their company is making actually works. So that's online education right now. So the question is it going to replace real college education? I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but I hope that it does.
So, you know, one of the questions that really comes out of that is, you know, can an online education completely replace a regular education? And then what do you lose? I mean, so we've kind of discussed some of the positives about an online education. You know, you have the information kind of available, you know, right there. You can kind of look at it anytime you want. You don't have to feel embarrassed if you don't understand something the first time around. So I'll post that question to you, Danish. I mean, what do you think are some of the negative aspects of an online education versus actually going to college and going to class and learning, for, you know, kind of the old school way, if any?
Yeah, you know, I took a good amount of online classes from, you know, simple just textbook classes down to a few math classes where there was a pretty rigorous course syllabus, and you know, the math class was a hybrid class where, you know, you would meet once a week in class, and then all the homework and everything was to be done online, and the teacher was pretty tech savvy, where, you know, he would teach on a tablet, and so all the notes and things were available. I mean, he would PDF them and then make them available online, and that in my eyes worked real well, because, you know, there's different ways people learn, and being able to, you know, it takes a certain type of person that can sit down and be disciplined enough, especially at home or wherever, and just focus, right? And especially with the internet, I mean, you can stumble upon a video on Facebook, end up on YouTube, and bam, 3 hours later, you know, and watching basketball highlights to the laughing baby to whatever, and you're like, where did 3 hours go? And just one video. It's very easy to get distracted. And that's where, like, I found myself, where I'm very easily distracted. I mean, if you could see the number of tabs I have open in Chrome right now, and I don't even know, like, what half of those are, but I know I need them, and so I haven't closed them. And so it's just easily just, like, right-click, new window, right? And I know I'm going to need this later. I don't know when, but I will need it. And so the education part, from an online college education, I think the model evolving every day. Right now with MIT and Harvard and some of these Ivy League schools offering free videos of the classroom, I think it's a great opportunity for someone that isn't attending those classes to be able to get an insight on the type of education that is offered, right? But for the online education to work, I think it really depends on the subject being taught, right? Like, it would be very difficult to teach, medical school 100% online, right? Like, I would be like, no, you went to University of Phoenix? Absolutely not. Like, you are not my doctor. Like, I don't, you know. And you know, the thing is, with University of Phoenix, the stigma does exist. Like, I took a couple courses at University of Phoenix, and I was like, dude, I just want to get this done. Let's just take some classes. And, you know, I later learned that the other person on the other end, the teacher, is like some random person that's getting paid $9 an hour to basically just check mark off the work that you're doing, right? Like, I remember I took one class, and it was a 16-week course. It was a business law class, I think. It was at a community college, and I didn't do any of the work, right? And I'm like, oh, crap, like, I need to take this course, right? And the teacher wasn't very, like, strict on doing the work. You know, there was quizzes and there was activities, right? And worksheets. And I ended up taking that class in one day, right? The day before, the day the final was on a Sunday. So the teacher was like, okay, you need to do all the quizzes today. I'm like, okay, no problem, right? I opened the book up and I had Google, two monitors, and I just cut and paste the question, found the answer, looked in the book. I knocked down, I think, 15 quizzes in one day, right? Headphones on, just zoned in, knocked them out, right? The next day, the final, knocked that out. And what's crazy is 16-week course, right? I knocked it out in 2 days, and I got a B, right? And what's interesting for me is, like, I aim for a C, nothing higher, nothing lower, right? If I get higher than a C, I actually get mad because it's like, dude, I work too much. And that's where, and we can have that conversation a little later on my ideology on why aim for a C. But if you look at that, it's like, okay, yeah, you got a grade, right? And I got my B, but did I learn anything?
Yeah.
Probably not, right? And so, and that's where the challenge with education is today, where the focus is on GPA, the focus is on what grade you got, and it's not necessarily on, hey, did this student actually learn what he set out to learn, right?
Right.
And there's multiple problems with that, right? Like, it was a 16-week course. 16 weeks? That's forever, right? And so that's where I don't remember what the question was. That's probably my problem because I continue rants.
No, I mean, so it's kind of, you're kind of going back to that same question, which is, you know, do you think there is still some value in actually going to class, you know, and going to class physically versus an online education? I mean, what is really the negative side of an online education?
The online education, it really does depend on what you're going for, right? And there are MBA programs that are available 100% online. And the question is like, is this guy qualified? Like, does this person learn something that was valuable enough that he or she can apply in their everyday life, right? And so I think the negative challenges is that there is a stigma because it's not hands-on. There's no collaborative group face-to-face interaction. But I think the models are still early on. And you know, now with something like Google Hangout, right? I mean, you can basically have a group meeting with Google Hangout, right? I can see what's going on. We all discuss. And I can record the conversation. I can go back. And so as these things evolved, and I'm sure many of you guys remember Google Wave, which I still feel was an awesome platform, maybe a little bit ahead of its time. But it was interesting because I remember when I got Google Wave and I had the invites and I was at Cal State Fullerton. And I was like, dude, you guys need to get on Google Wave, right? And I was like super selling Google Wave. I got them invited. I put them on. They were just so confused. Like, they had no idea what to use. They had no idea what to do with this thing, right? And so we ended up defaulting to a Dropbox, which made sense. So I was like, all right, this, you know, okay, file sharing, okay, cool, I get it. But file sharing live, I'm like, my mind is blown.
Yeah.
And so I think for someone like your son or your daughter, I think because they're growing up and learning that way, it will evolve. The current state, I think it still needs to improve. So the negatives are, there's not a whole lot of learning going on, in my opinion. And two, the stigma in the workplace, if your degree is 100% online, is still not, sure, they may be accredited, but it's known the level of education that one receives was not the same as in a in-class environment.
Well, the interesting thing about that is there's actually a joke. Some guy, he's got a bachelor's degree. He goes and gets a job, and he's like, all right, you got your job. Here's the broomstick. Because even though he has a bachelor's degree, he has no workplace, you know, experience whatsoever. So yeah. Even though he's got a job, he still got to start at the bottom of the company because he doesn't know exactly what happens in the company. So he has to learn from the bottom up. Sure, that has changed, but that was a huge joke back in the days because even though you went to college, like you mentioned, you know, you got an education. No matter if you got an education through a class or an online class, you still, your entire aim was to go for higher GPA, you know, make sure that you pass all your classes, and nowhere is there an incentive that's saying that, hey, you have to learn this knowledge in this way or be able to apply that knowledge that you're learning, you know.
I think that's definitely true, especially when you're talking about different types of fields, you know. I mean, obviously there's certain fields where you learn an actual trade and you learn some kinds of, you know, skill set that you can directly apply when you start working, like take an architect or something, you know. I mean, you obviously learn all the stuff about how to actually, you know, make a building. So when you go to, you might get a low job, but you're still going to get a job as an architect, you know.
Correct.
Hopefully not a janitor at janitor that point.
There ain't nothing wrong with being a janitor.
No, there isn't. But if you paid the money to get a degree in architecture or something,
sure,
you hope to apply it. But to me, I think one of the biggest pluses for an online education is that it's going to help in this escalation of cost that's going on with education, right? I mean, the one thing that worries me is like, gosh, when my daughter grows up and she actually comes to age and wants to, let's say, go to a really good school or something and wants to go to a private college, I mean, I have no idea how I'm going to be able to afford that $1 million tuition. That's probably how much it's going to end up costing, you know?
Yeah.
So the hope is that, you know, these, not University of Phoenix, but these high-end institutions can somehow lower their cost of education by moving more and more of their classes online. And like you said, you can still have a very social environment using the technology like Google+, you know, like using something like Google Wave. And I think they have some specifically school-centric websites like Blackboard or something that are really focused on building a collaborative environment, even though it is strictly online. So you're still having to interact with people. Maybe you don't have to smell them as much, you know, because they're not sweating, they're, you know, sitting next to you. But at the same time, now you brought up a really good point about accountability, right? I mean, how do you make sure that people are really held accountable in terms of dedicating the amount of time to learn the subject matter online versus offline?
You know? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I'm not saying that I did this, may or may have done this, but, you know, the beauty of Craigslist is I go on and place an ad and I say, hey, look, this is what I need, right? And, shoot, I did this in high school, right? I paid some guy, I gave somebody a computer to write my research paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I can go on Craigslist, I can hire someone and be like, hey, take this class for me. And, you know, if the dollars are right, somebody would do that. And so I'm not saying that people are that conniving or, you know, that creative or clever to do that. But that is also out there, right? And now the traditional sense, I mean, my opinion is that entire system is getting an overhaul or is in the process of getting an overhaul, and it's difficult to keep up with all the technology that's being introduced. So when your son and daughter are in the college system, it will I hope, be a different experience. Now, if you look at non-college courses, right, if you look at the Khan Academy, the Code Academy, you look at, you know, where you can hire tutors on Skype and learn a language or be tutored in English or math or et cetera, there's a lot of education going on there, and that hasn't been formalized, right? Because I mean, Skype is just a form of tool to use. You know, I had talked to this company a few weeks back where they're launching an application on the iPhone which will allow, you know, users to get in touch with a tutor or get in touch with someone to learn a language or whatever, and they're trying to formalize that process. And so a lot of that is going on, and so we'll see where that's headed.
You know, one of the things that I would like to see come out of online education is, like, you know, you get a chance to be exposed to some really, really smart people. You know, one of the things that you suffer from is the guy going to community college and studying, let's say, you know, science there or something like that. The kind of teacher that he has there is not going to be the same as the guy who's teaching that same course at MIT or Harvard, you know. And I think getting an opportunity to be exposed to some of the greatest minds out there, kind of like the way that MIT and Harvard are sharing their lectures, I mean, I think that's a really great opportunity that we can tap into. And, I mean, obviously, you definitely need the subjects that need that kind of hands-on training where you kind of need a professor or somebody that's right there to help you along. But there's a lot of other things that we can really gain a lot from just listening to some people who are really smart. And you kind of get that exposure right now, you know, listening to TED Talks and so forth. But I think if the college education kind of became more well-rounded so that they didn't have to spend that much money on hiring that many professors, that certain kind of classes can be dedicated to be online, the classes that need you to come to class because you're doing some kind of a lab, you need that hands-on, you know, experience with certain kinds of hardware, obviously that makes a lot more sense than having you do that in your living room, right?
No, of course.
I agree. And because Harvard education and Stanford education and the professors that teach in those universities are highly accredited, you know, they have a lot of experience and they come from, you know, a more known background or whatever, they've actually started posting every single class online with podcasts, with iTunes University program. iTunes University has over 25, actually there's millions of courses online available. A lot of them from Stanford, Harvard, these big universities are posting their entire courses online. The funny thing is the first class that Stanford University offered for iOS programming, sure, there was 150 people in the class, but there was 100,000 downloads of the podcast from iTunes U for that first class. And since then, you know, it's been a huge hit. Actually, last year they provided all of the core materials required that were passed out in class online. There's a new service called Piazza.com, which enables you to ask questions from your instructors online.
Yeah. So let me ask kind of a tangential question here. I mean, so let's say if you are somebody that gets a lot of their education from listening to these lectures, I mean, one of the things that going to a really good institution kind of helped the employer figure out is, hey, I have a really smart guy that I'm dealing with here. Okay, he went to Harvard. I can assume a lot of things at that point, right? Mm-hmm. So how does the guy who's hiring the people tomorrow or the next 10 years or 15 years start to, you know, evaluate the people that are coming in to applying for jobs, you know? Because if you start to switch the criteria a little bit and not just go off of, well, okay, he went to MIT, he went to, you know, UCLA, as kind of a good way to base on, you know, the quality of the person you're getting, how do you then start evaluating people? What do you look at? You know, are we going back to like an experience type of thing? Show me what you've done. I mean, I don't really care about your education, but so what do you think, Danish? I mean,
that's an interesting question. I think the challenge, you know, with the Ivy League schools, it's not just the education, right? It's who you were surrounded by, who you the experience you went through, right? And like if you look at alumni and things like that, I mean, they're pretty strong. Like if you meet a Harvard guy or if you meet whatever school, you know, the people are able to connect from the past. And so if you open that up, and with the Ivy League schools, it's sort of like this exclusive club, right, that you're part of. And
the sheer difficulty of getting into it unless you're, you know, just really wealthy or connected, you know, so there's two aspects to it.
Yeah.
Or really smart, you know.
Exactly. And so if you open it up and say, okay, look, yeah, we'll allow you to take classes online and do all that. I think the challenge is, for the employer, how does he quantify that versus, you know, somebody that went to a traditional school? I mean, Harvard's been around for, what, 300 years?
Yeah, right? Or any school for that matter. You know, I mean, if you say I went to a UC school, you know that, okay, that guy did a certain level of work to get in there. He got the kind of grades. You can kind of make a lot of assumptions on what kind of person you're getting. And I find that kind of difficult. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, how does that guy who comes to you and says, look, man, I know all of this stuff. I learned it from watching all these online lectures and so forth. And I'm kind of going away from like, okay, I went to an online university. I'm just talking about here's somebody that was kind of a homeschooled, self-study type of person. Brilliant guy, right? How does he show that off to a potential employer and prove to them that, hey, I can do this stuff. I'm your man, you know.
And of course,
can compete with a guy that has a degree from some school, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge is just that, right? Where how, because that person went to X school, it just allows for someone to say, okay, yeah, this guy, you know, just it's an easy way to filter, right? Where, right. Hey, look, this guy has a degree. Okay, cool. These are all this is my pile of resumes that have a degree. And that's where, depending on what field you're in, it does matter that you have a degree or not, right? For example, like if I'm hiring for a developer or a designer, I don't really care what school he went to. What I care about is can he deliver, right? Can he or she do what it is that I need? And as the resume gets built for that individual, so do the opportunities, right? Because the older you get and the more experience you get, the less it matters in certain areas, what school you went to and how you obtained the education that you have today, right? I mean, for myself, like, I can honestly say I've learned very little from, not, I guess maybe it's not fair to say that, but I've learned very little, in my opinion, from the traditional education, right? I a lot of the learning that happened in my life was just hands-on. It was, I did it, I made a mistake, and I said, okay, don't do that again. Or I did it, and it worked, and I said, okay, I need to do more of this. And so even in business, right, interacting with individuals, public speaking, selling, even accounting, right, it was just like, open up QuickBooks, I need to do accounting, figure out, I'm sure, you know, accounting guys are like, QuickBooks, this guy. But even, you know, putting together a profit and loss statement or a budget or a balance sheet, you know, it was just like, okay, I need to figure this out. Somebody asked me for it. I need to figure it out, right? And so, but that doesn't always relate. If I were to apply for a job, I think it would be very difficult for me, where people would say, okay, I see this guy's experience, but he doesn't have the Ivy League or the MBA that all the other candidates do, right? And so right off the bat, it doesn't necessarily matter what you do because the competition has X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of said it there, which is to get your foot in the door for a lot of people. That's where that education really comes in handy. And after that, if you have a large portfolio of work and references and things like that, then the education matters less and less because you kind of have a proven track record. But that initial break, it's very tough to get when you're basically just trying to get people to take your word for it that you know what you're talking about, you know,
yeah, and
not have a piece of paper.
Exactly. And, you know, whenever I give advice to the young ones that are about to go into college and you know, they may mention, oh, hey, you know, I want to go to USC or I want to go to a private school or a Ivy League school or prestigious school that's ranked high, but I don't think I'll get in or it's too expensive or et cetera. My advice is, look, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it, right? Do it how you want to. Money comes and goes, right? Sure, that education might cost you 120 grand, but because in the real world it does matter to a certain extent that what school you went to and who you know. Because at the end of the day, to excel, and this is sort of off topic now, completely off online education, but to excel, it's not what you know, it's necessarily who you know. And it sucks, but it's the harsh reality where, depending on the school you went to, the alumni network is large, and you're able to network and connect. And even when you are at that school, you're able to meet individuals that are there to do whatever you are there to do, and so you're able to make that network. And so if you're going to do it, you might as well do it. Now, going back to online education, I think it's definitely going to evolve, and it's definitely in its infancy.
And Jeanette, welcome back. It also comes down to what you're passionate about, right?
Sure.
Sure, you went to college, but you took the education that you're passionate about, so you're going to do everything possible, humanly possible, to build up your experience, build up your portfolio, build up, you know, what it is that you want to be in when you go to work.
Yeah.
And for people who are starting out, colleges and companies offer internship programs. So you learn a lot about how a company works, or you learn a lot about how your job is going to affect or what it is that you're learning. So the internship programs help a lot in building experience. Sure, you're not getting paid a whole lot, but the program lets you in the door of a big company, a Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 200 companies, all these companies, they offer internship programs where you can get in, get experience, and decide, hey, do I really want to be in this field? If not, then you know you'll go back to college and you learn a different thing.
Goes back to what Danish's point was, that I think that internship experience allows you to get face time with the people that are going to be your potential employers in the future. You know,
exactly.
And so the moment those people can put a face and a personality and kind of a little bit more to who you are and the kind of work that you're, you know, capable of, that makes it that much easier for them to make the decision to hire you or not. You know,
exactly.
The one thing I wanted to kind of go back to a little bit was, you know, let's talk about some of the subject matters the subjects that are kind of hardcore, you know, take the sciences, you know, physics, or people who want to really, you know, go in and do PhDs and stuff like that. Do you think an online education could ever match, you know, or be able to help people achieve that level of expertise? Or is there something to be gained from actually doing research and so forth that, those people are able to do at their universities and so forth, you know, because it is one thing to say you have these subjects that are kind of, you know, like, okay, take psychology or whatever, you know, it's you could probably do the entire psychology degree online. I don't think you're going to gain that much more from going to school for or without, you know, I'm biased a little bit. But at the same time, then if you're really taking at somebody who wants to become a physicist or something like that, you know, Can an online education ever compare to actually being there at a research institution, getting your hands dirty, and doing research at the front line, I guess?
I think to a certain extent, yes. Where from, say, for example, if it's someone that wants to major in physics, you know, there's the way the current system is set up, you know, I got to take a bunch of general education classes and then I move on to take my major classes, and so it'll give an opportunity for them to take the general education classes online, where they know they need to do it. It's not necessarily something that I'm interested in, but that's what I need to do. And then when the major classes come around, you know, that's something that, you know, you do need to have a hands-on, learn hands-on, right? Like, you look at chemistry, I mean, you're not going to, sure, you can learn all you want about the different chemicals and what they do and what they don't do, but when you first mix some chemicals up and you have some crazy reaction, like, wow, that's crazy, like, that was awesome, or that was, I'm not going to do that again.
You know, one of the things I would love to see is the financial aspect of it also change. Like, you know what, online classes should cost less than taking classes when you're actually going to school, you know? But currently, I don't think they do that. I mean, basically, you sign up for a certain number of units. It doesn't matter if the class is online or offline or whatnot. And I think that would be another aspect where it could help, you know, the overall cost of education to go down and make it more affordable for people. Because, I mean, ultimately, I think we all agree you need to learn, get your learn on somewhere. You know, either if it's online or offline or whatever, there has to be some way for you to have access to this information. I mean, and the one issue that I have with the guy that goes out and kind of learns stuff on his own is that there's a danger there that you pick and choose, you know? And you tend to avoid getting, like, a real complete understanding of a subject matter, you know. And let's say, I mean, just from my own experience, you know, we in computer science, there's a lot of stuff that I absolutely hated going through. You know, it was tough. It required a lot of thinking. There was a lot of mathematics and stuff that was involved in it. But I definitely learned something after I got out of that class. And I would never have done that type of work if I was doing something on my own. I just would never have
done it. Without a doubt.
And so it's kind of like that institution helps you or forces you to kind of, you know, go through and learn something completely or as completely as, you know, as possible within a semester.
The laying of the foundation is important, right? In say, for example, your career, I mean, having gone through that, I'm sure some of them have came up in practical life and you're like, oh, I can build upon this because I know that I now have the basic foundation. And so, I mean, I see that when we hire a developer that, you know, learned everything on his own, and then we have a developer that went through the traditional route, and you see the clear difference in the developer that went the traditional route is a little more thorough. He crosses his I's, crosses his T's, dots his I's, versus the one that learned on his own. You know, he's a little rough, needs polishing. And so education is, you know, we've been brainwashed that it's a traditional sense, but there's many ways to learn. And you're right. It going and being forced to follow a curriculum does lay a better foundation. And maybe that's where the online education needs to evolve. To have a stronger curriculum, and that's where, you know, college is trying to do that, where they said, hey, look, these are the requirements, and then like Code Academy, like, hey, this person has gone through these different lessons, and this is where they've excelled in, this is where they haven't excelled in. Going back to sort of the cost perspective, it's like online books, right? Ebooks should be cheaper, right?
Right.
But they're not. You know, an MP3 album should not be $10. But it is, because we've been accustomed to it, right? And at the end of the day, education is a business to fund the operation, right? And so,
there is that one downside to it that, you know, if the more and more things shift to online, there's a lot of people that rely on jobs working in these big institutions, you know, filling in as professors, as teachers, as, you know, and so forth. And I mean, and you can kind of imagine you really need one expert to do a really good lecture series on some subject, let's say physics 101, and that could apply to every single person taking physics 101 across the entire world, for that matter, you know? And say Albert Einstein recorded a lecture, you know what I'm saying, right? I mean, what else would you want from that, right?
So, exactly. And that's where
puts all the other professors out of business, you know?
Yeah, and that's where I see the transition where, yeah, there may be the elite professors that are the ones that are educating, but there is still a need for the facilitator, the tutors, the ones that reinforce what it is that I'm supposed to be learning. Right. I mean, at the end of the day, it'd be great if, you know, your son and daughter woke up and every day they're like, okay, these are the things I need to learn, and you didn't need to tell them, right? Like that it would probably be a dream come true for you guys. I don't need a potty train. All right, awesome. Like, so there will be needs. There will be someone that would need to facilitate that.
I guess we need the Matrix chip style, right?
That's right. You need that plug that goes in the back of your head.
Oh yeah, I would love
download,
that.
Download. You know.
I was looking for the limitless drug the other day, NZT. I couldn't find it.
Oh.
Well, there is one, but it's like basically an anti-sleep aid. Which has a ridiculous amount of side effects. So, Omer, I know your wife has a prescription pad, so if she can hook it up.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I read an interesting biography of Isaac Newton, you know, and you know, as most of you guys probably know, I mean, he was a guy who single-handedly did so many things over a course of summer, you know, basically discovered calculus, made contribution to optics, did all kinds of contributions to physics. And the one thing that he himself kind of noted was that he just had an uncanny ability to focus, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't say that he was exceptionally bright. I mean, obviously he was. But he was just like, he could focus on a particular problem for hours and hours and hours. And I sometimes think about that in general, most of us, maybe it's a fault of the internet, we just lose that ability to do that anymore. You know, to actually sit there for a couple of hours just focused on one thing, it's almost impossible for me. I mean, I literally can't do it. You know, it's like maybe 10 minutes at tops, and then I have to get something, maybe go grab something to eat, go browse what's going on Reddit. You know, it's like having that type of concentration is almost the key, you know, ingredient to really making breakthroughs in certain areas, you know.
Yeah, and no, that's without a doubt. And so we'll see what the future holds. I think the online education will definitely be making a transition, and with all the new tools that are coming out, there's definitely a push with technology, and with all the things that are going on with the iPad, the iPhone, and things like that, there's a heavy push in focusing on education and building applications. And then on the flip side, you know, the college systems are trying to figure out a way to monetize and be able to add some credibility.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we've beaten that one to death. So maybe we'll wrap up. I think let's talk a little bit. One of the segments that I wanted to do in this podcast is let's talk a little bit about our kind of our backgrounds and go back in time a little bit and, you know, bring out that feeling of nostalgia. So the question that I have for you guys is, you know, what was your first experience with a computer? You know, I mean, what was the first time you got your hands on one, and how did that maybe bring you to, you know, towards technology, I guess? So, Junaid, why don't you start on that one?
Sweet. As far as I can remember, the first computer that my dad got me was a 486, but I'm guessing before that, my neighbor, he actually had a Commodore 64, which you'd be able to plug it to a regular cathode ray tube television and type your stuff out. There were games. I don't remember exactly how all of that worked, but the first PC, because it was a borrowed PC, it was a borrowed system, you know, you have limited time. And you could have just, you know, you can just go out and just do everything that you possibly think you can with that. But the first PC was a 486 DX2 33 megahertz. It was a badass at that time. It was
with the math coprocessor, the DX.
Yeah, with the math coprocessor ALU unit, you know, ALU. It had the
was it
keyboard.
The arithmetic? Something unit, I forget.
Yeah, arithmetic logic unit.
Logic unit, that's it.
So the system was pretty badass. I mean, you know, it had just a tower, a monitor, and a keyboard. I don't even think we had a mouse. because we were.
I'm sure it was cream colored, like all computers used to
be. It was beige in color. Yes, it was. And for the longest time, you know, I was pretty excited. I don't remember what I did on it, to tell you the truth. But there were some examples of, you know, playing with BASIC. Then later on, when Windows 3.1 came out, I was very excited because I happened to know somebody who had the floppy disks to install Windows 3.1 on the machine. And I was pretty impressed. Yeah, I know. So I was pretty impressed. Like, how are they able to cram 2.88 megabytes of data on a 1.44 megabyte floppy? And like, how can I copy this over? You know, and you know, that's where compression came in, and compression tech, because like, apparently they had that,
and they needed it that much more back then. So
yeah, they did. They surely did need it back then.
Yeah.
So Windows 3.1 got into Turbo Pascal programming. Then it was not long before I moved to the United States, and I was able to, you know, get online with AOL. My first computer here was a hand-me-down, which was pretty awesome, because I spent literally an entire evening taking apart one computer and taking apart another computer, putting parts together and making a hybrid of, you
making
know,
a supercomputer.
Yeah, supercomputer, which had the best of both worlds from the two computers that I had. For the longest time, I had an AMD.
Jay was trying to make Kit.
Yeah, that's right. But it was awesome. I started with, you know, Windows 95. It was pretty exciting. Got the GUI, and, you know, I started learning about software. There was Microsoft Word, which led me to crazy stuff like build published flyers and whatnot.
All right, and so we'll have to save that story for the future,
yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
Because now you're getting into like what happened maybe after a decade.
Yes,
time
exactly.
Has gone by.
Yeah, Jay's trying to give us a lesson on operating systems.
That's right.
What's funny is you mentioned Windows. I didn't hear any Mac OS or Apple IIgs, but we'll save that for another day.
How about you, Danish? What was your first exposure to computer?
Man, you know, ever since as far back as I could remember, since the age of probably, I want to say 8 or 9 or maybe even further back, I remember having a x86, I think it was, which ran DOS, and there was this Word program, not Word, but it was just like a text-based program, and I would make pictures with /\\,
AstroArt, baby.
Nice.
Yeah, and I remember I made a boat one time, I made a house, and it was like you had to be strategic on where you know, hitting the space bar, and then be like, okay, line that one up, enter, and you know, then you go to the next one, and then I remember like messing up, and you're like, oh, hell no, like I gotta, there was no cursor, so it was just arrows, right? So it's like, oh, crap, now I gotta go all the way up, and I gotta go all the way down, and I'm like, now I think back, and I'm like, why was I doing that? And then, you know, the next DOS version came out, and it was Nibbles and Gorilla, right? And so I remember we bought an AST computer, which was a 486, and it had a Windows 3.1. You were like, it had the graphic user interface, and it definitely evolved. And it was nuts, because I remember this computer, and it had like no color, and it was just the monitor was whatever, two colors or three colors or whatever it was, and so
monochrome.
Monochrome, yeah. And I remember I would write my essays and things like that on there, and the dot matrix printer. And then I remember like ripping those things for days, right? And my dad would get really mad because I would just keep ripping them. And he's like, dude, this is like fresh paper. Now I can't use this paper in the printer. I'm like, dude, buy more paper. Like, this is awesome, right? You just continue to rip them, and then you make a ball out of it, and then you get mad when one of them rips in the middle. And so, but yeah, those things have definitely evolved from making drawings from \\\ and \\. And maybe that should have been my first like, dude, you are not a designer. You have no creativity. But I remember the boat, and I remember, like, clearly telling, like, showing, like, I would print it. I printed it out, and I would show my cousin. I'm like, dude, I made this boat. And he was just like, I don't understand. Like, I don't have a computer. What do you mean? Like, you made this boat.
See, that's another great point is when you have the luxury of your dad being a techie, you get exposed to the most latest tech, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like you mentioned, you've been messing with
ASTs.
XTs, right?
XT, yeah. Before the 286, yeah, XT.
Before the 286. XTs. Those things were around when I was growing up as well. But my dad, you know, he was a asset analyst, you know, working on mini computers back in the days. And he finally decided, you know, 486 was the one to get. And that's where I got exposed because we had 386s at school. But I didn't get too much exposure to it because you have time limit. Mm-hmm. You have one period to go to the class.
Oregon Trail.
Computers. Yeah.
Yeah. Oregon Trail.
And you're right. It was weird because when I would take my essay to school typed, like they were like, no, printed. It needs to be printed.
It needs to be handwritten.
It needs to be handwritten. And I'm like, no, I spent like hours typing this up for you. Now you want me to go back and handwrite this? Like, no, you can't read my writing. Maybe that's why my writing is so horrible.
Yeah.
Because I was like, no, you're gonna take this. This is the future. And so and that was weird because even like going through school, like up until like eighth or ninth grade, like I was not allowed to turn in assignments that were typed. And I'm like, dude, like, and when I would turn in assignments, they were all crazy. Like they were like just properly formatted, they were just done up. Like I remember one time the teacher was like, this is how you're supposed to turn it in, and I'm like, thank God, like it took you 5 years, but thank God.
That's right.
Maybe. How about you, Omer? What? You took it back to the Commodore.
Well, you know, I would probably go back a little bit more than that because I was, you know, I guess unfortunate enough when I was in Pakistan, I had...
Don't tell me you're going to say the abacus, bro, because...
No. Well, when I was in Pakistan, well, I had absolutely no... I didn't even encounter a computer. I don't think I ever saw one in a classroom or in someone's house or anything. So my first exposure really was when I first came to the States, which was about when I was 8 or 9, and then when I went to elementary school, and they had the Apple II computer there, and the first thing that people were allowed to play on there was Oregon Trail. So I was just going to mention that. That was probably the first time I ever actually got my hands on a computer, you know, which was the Apple II, and actually played some games on it and found that really fascinating. And then I'm not really sure whose decision it was, but why we bought a Commodore, that was what we ended up getting. So that was the first computer that we actually owned was a Commodore 128. And this computer was, I mean, I think the one thing people take for granted now is that the information about how to do stuff on a computer was almost impossible to find back then, you know?
Oh, yes.
You know, and as a kid who doesn't have money to go out and buy books or, you know, things like that, that was one of the things that I would spend hours trying to just figure out how to do things on this thing because I didn't have like Wikipedia articles or 1,000 different forums that I have today to just Google a question on.
Encyclopedia used to cost back then.
Yeah, you would have to get a CD.
That was a prestigious thing.
No, it was.
Encarta.
Encarta, oh.
So I think for me, that process of trying to figure out how to use this thing and actually making those little breakthroughs did a lot to kind of influence that, you know, influence my decision to go in this career because I think I really enjoyed that aspect, you know, and really enjoyed that feeling of, you know, tinkering with something and like trying this and trying that and seeing, oh, wow, okay, if I type this command, this happens, you know. And then I think from that point on, I didn't get another computer until I actually bought like a Pentium or something. I think that's really what we ended up getting. It was a Pentium, the 60 or, you know, megahertz computer. It ran Windows 95. And that was just a huge leap. You know, once I was there, I found myself somehow getting bulletin board services. I don't know if you guys spent any time on BBSs, but that was the thing that was there before any of this online stuff happened. You know, before AOL, before the internet, you would dial up to another computer which was running some kind of application that lets you post messages and play some stupid ASCII art games. Like, I used to play this game called Lord of the Dragon or whatever. And that was kind of the world where I started to get really exposed to other things and other technologies, and kind of led me to really fall in love with this device, you know, because I think as kids you started to realize that, hey, from this one machine, I have access to the world, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's like the big, at the point that I made that realization, it was like wow, you know, really realizing the full potential. This is not just a bunch of keys. This is everything that I could ever want to know about, access to anything. It's available from this, you know, little box. And I think us kids probably realize that a lot sooner than most of the adults that we were surrounded by, you know?
Yeah.
Who kind of looked at it as just kind of a novelty item.
You know? No, I remember, like, giving classes, not classes, but, like, doing tutorials on basic computers to friends and family and things like that. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to my business partner, Shays, and he has a son that is 6 or 7. And he is learning. He's, I think, done 6 or 7 Code Academy courses or whatever.
Nice.
And so it's nuts where, you know, what we're talking about, he's now taking to another level, right, where he's learning the exact applications that are being developed. I mean, you sent me that Raspberry Pi thing where that child, 7 years old, you know, made a game and put that together.
The country of Estonia, I mean, I posted another link on Facebook about how that they're actually starting a curriculum, you know, starting from grade one with teaching programming all the way through college, because I think programming is a great way to learn good problem-solving skills.
And
they apply, especially for kids growing up nowadays, you are going to have to know how to do stuff on a computer at one level or another. You know, you just can't avoid it. You know.
So my next question, and maybe this will be something we'll talk about a little later, is with all that's available at the touch of a finger, right? The touch of a key or a mouse, with Google, Wikipedia, and all the forums and boards that are available, do I really need to know the general education that I get taught in school, or do I just need to know how to access that information when I need it?
I think that's a big question, because Henry Ford of Ford Corporation, he was not the smartest man at all, but he knew how to get in touch with one.
Yeah, being able to be resourceful enough to figure it out.
Exactly.
So I think you have to have a bare minimum amount of knowledge so that you know the right question to ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't know how to add 2 + 2, then no matter what forum you're going to go on, you're in trouble at that point. But I kind of agree. I mean, I think you need to have a certain skill set that you have to have. And maybe that's changed now that we have access to all of this information that we are available to, you know?
Yep.
But now, once you kind of really define that really well, that, okay, as long as I know this basic pieces of information, I know how to read, I know how to do certain kinds of, you know, analytical computations and so forth, then anything after that, I can easily look up, take 15, 20 minutes to understand it and use that information rather than having to spend years in college learning something like that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't remember anything from chemistry other than H2O is water.
What about HCl and NaCl2?
Well, that has to do with, like, you know, your particular field that you're working in, right?
Exactly. I mean,
if you're working at a chemical company, I would think that you'd probably have the exact same thing, like, man, I took this computer class, I don't know what the hell that was for. You
sure.
Know,
yep. Yep.
You know? But I can tell you how to do stoichiometry, you know?
So then the next question is should children early on be molded to a certain direction so they can become experts in a certain field? But I think we'll leave some of these questions to another day, another topic.
Yep. I think that will be a great one to start off next time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so why don't we call it a wrap? And again, I want to thank my two co-hosts for joining me tonight. Hopefully, we'll be coming back every week, same time, same bat channel. You know, And hopefully we can, continue to have good conversations. Hopefully be better at managing our time and so forth. But I think we'll toss these long episodes up to growing pains as we start to get better and better at, keeping track of time and segments and this and that.
So yeah, if you're still listening.
We are really impressed that you're still listening.
Yeah.
Because our wives are asleep.
Exactly. That's why we can talk for so long and go on and on and on. So thank you for joining us.
I think my son's awake.
Lucky you.
So we'll wrap it up and see you guys next week.